Today's broadcast was originally recorded on August 21st, 2025.
I got something weighing heavy on my heart. I really got to get it out there. I realized I was wrong. I've been on the wrong side of history. I've been supporting the wrong party all along. And I talked with some people over the last few months, and I've decided I'm going to go ahead and become a Democrat because they're the party of truth, liberty, and freedom. They stand for the American people. They stand for what's best for this nation. And I don't know how I can apologize for being so far on the wrong side of history. But I truly regret anything I did to hurt your feelings. And I expect the admonishment. I'll take it. Hopefully you can help me heal through it and grow as a human to be more accepting and more loving of my newfound party allegiance. Hopefully you won't be too hard on me. It's really, really, really taken a lot for me to come out and say this. So, you know, if you're going to get into the comments, just please take it up easy on me. I'm feeling very emotional and vulnerable right now, and I could use the support.
We support you, sir. We will take it easy on you.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
At least here at the broadcast.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Can't speak for the rest of the world.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. To the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We will be joined momentarily by our old friends Digby and Driftglass, when I hope we'll be able to hash out some important issues of the day, such as how old is too old to be an angry white hippie protesting against Trump's D.C. takeover? Whether Democrats will be able to out-gerrymander Texas Republicans before the 2026 midterms? Why, oh why, it could be that Donald Trump is still refusing to release the Epstein files he repeatedly promised to release while running for president. And if time allows, the age-old question, is slavery bad? Also, Desi Doyen will be here with our latest Green News report.
Yep.
Hi, Des.
Hey.
It is our last before we head out for an end of summer break next week. Des, you've got some interesting, hilarious and or enraging NASA news in today's
both?
Report. Yeah, I should note about the former MTV star who is now running America's space agency and America's, yes, Earth Study Agency, NASA. That's ahead today. But very quickly, a few news headlines since we last spoke on yesterday's program. Shortly after airtime yesterday, the California Supreme Court rang into the California redistricting measure to deny a GOP court challenge to state Democrats' plan to place a ballot initiative for a new U.S. House map before voters in a special election this November, with the court finding the California Republican Party, quote, failed to meet their burden of establishing a basis for relief from the court under the state constitution. This means that the ruling will allow Democrats to proceed with a two-third vote of the state legislature to put the initiative before voters this November, to waive the state's independent citizens redistricting commission map for now in favor of a new U.S. House map drawn up by Democrats in response to Republican Texas state leaders and their gerrymandering of their map to steal the seats of five Democratic U.S. House members in next year's critical midterms, in which Democrats hope to win back a House majority and begin to put the brakes on Trump's authoritarian agenda. That happened at just about the same time as Texas Republicans were finally able to ram their new map through down in the Lone Star State as demanded by Trump through the state house after 2 weeks of delay by Democrats who left the state to prevent the quorum needed for passage for voting on the measure. As we go to air, the matter is now before the GOP-controlled Texas State Senate, which will approve the new map before sending it to Republican Governor Greg Abbott for his signature. State Democrats vow to challenge that map in the courts in Texas. According to the Nashville Banner on Thursday morning, both Kilmar Abrego Garcia and the U.S. Attorney's Office for Middle Tennessee have agreed that Abrego Garcia can now be released from custody. In a spate of filings earlier in the week, lawyers for the El Salvadoran Maryland man who was arrested and detained in Tennessee on seemingly trumped-up charges following his return from an El Salvadoran gulag where the administration admits he was sent accidentally. They asked Judge Waverly Crenshaw to release him on Friday. Crenshaw had issued a stay of Brego Garcia's release order until Friday due to uncertainty about whether immigration and customs enforcement officials would attempt to detain and deport him yet again after his release. But after a federal judge in Maryland barred ICE from using a detainer warrant to grab him upon release, Abrego Garcia's attorneys filed notice with the court in Nashville that he wanted to be released. Acting U.S. Attorney Rob McGuire agreed on Wednesday, and Abrego Garcia's attorneys have asked Judge Crenshaw to order ICE to allow him to have access to legal counsel in the event that he is detained yet again, despite supposed assurances that he would not be. And finally, I suspect you've already heard the news today that the New York Appeals Court has finally ruled in the massive civil fraud verdict against 34-time criminal felon, adjudicated sex abuser, and President of the United States, Donald Trump. As AP reports, a New York appeals court on Thursday threw out the massive financial penalty a state judge imposed on President Donald Trump while narrowly upholding a finding that, yes, he engaged in fraud by exaggerating his wealth by hundreds of millions of dollars for decades in fraudulent financial filings to receive loans and tax breaks. The ruling spares Trump from a potential $500 million fine, but still bans him and his two eldest sons from serving in corporate leadership for a few years. Trump, in a social media post, falsely claimed, quote, total victory in the fake matter brought before brought against him by New York State Attorney General Letitia James, though the ruling on the amount of the fine that he is to face for his and his son's repeated fraud over many years, that fraud ruling is still in place. The only thing that was thrown out was the amount that he has to pay, and a new fine may still be determined by the courts. After finding that Trump flagrantly padded financial statements that went to lenders and insurers, New York State Judge Arthur Engoron ordered Trump last year to pay $355 million in penalties. With interest, that sum has topped $515 million. Additional penalties levied on some other Trump Organization executives, including Trump's sons, Eric and Don Jr., bring that total to $527 million with interest. That number was found to be excessive by the state's appeals court. But as our friend, attorney, former lifelong Republican, and occasional broadcast guest Keith Barber observes at Daily Coast today, where he writes as Keith DB, he says, expect to hear in the near future claims that this decision was a complete vindication, or words to that effect, from Trump and his supporters. As noted, as Keith predicted, in fact, Trump would go on to describe the ruling in all caps as a total victory. When you hear such words, advises Barber, know that they are complete lies. First and foremost, he notes, the appeals court agreed that Trump committed the fraud, all of the fraud that the lower court found him liable for. The only conclusion was that the fine was excessive, not that no punishment is deserved. In fact, the court left in place the injunctions against the business and remanded the matter of fines for further consideration. Some actual quotes cited by Barber from the opinion of the court that underscore his point, quote, "We find that the court correctly found defendants liable. We agree that the Attorney General acted well within her lawful power in bringing this action and that she vindicated a public interest in doing so." Does that sound like complete vindication? Asks Barber, who quotes another passage from the ruling, quote, "While the injunctive relief order by the court is well-crafted to curb defendants' business culture, the court's disgorgement order, which directs that defendants pay nearly $500 million to New York, is an excessive fine that violates the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. Thus, some fine is appropriate, just one of a lesser amount," notes Barber. Finally, the court wrote, "The record at trial, quote, overwhelmingly supports the lower court's finding of liability for violations of the penal law." So, yes, Trump and his company and his top executives, including his two eldest sons, committed massive fraud against the people of New York by lying for years, even about the size of his Trump Tower penthouse, which he described in these legal documents as being three times larger than it actually is, that they were, all these assets were worth more than they were actually worth in order to get favorable loans and tax breaks. That verdict stands. The only question that remains is what, if anything, should be the financial penalty that Trump pays for it. So, not great news for those of us who believe in justice and the rule of law, but not nearly as terrible as some in the media have been describing it. Nor anywhere near the total vindication that the 34-time convicted criminal, sexual assaulter, and financial fraudster Donald Trump is now falsely claiming the New York ruling on Thursday to be. Joining us now for sage insight on some of that and likely much more are two of our old, very smart OG blogger pals, Heather Digby Parton, longtime award-winning Salon columnist and proprietor of the much-beloved Digby's Hullabaloo blog, and the notorious Driftglass, as he is mostly known, though sometimes as simply Bill. He is the co-host of the long-running Professional Left podcast hosted each week by him and his wife, known as Blue Gal, or Fran, you may know her, rain or shine, from what they lovingly describe as flyover country, Illinois. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Bradcast.
Hey, Brad.
Good to be here.
Delighted to have you both here. It may be the least important story of the day, in truth, though I suspect it is likely to be the most covered by the corporate media. So let me ask you both very quickly, if you don't mind, about it. You got any thoughts on the news out of New York concerning the court tossing out Trump's $500 million fraud fine? Let me start with, for a change, let's start with Driftglass.
Well, he's still guilty, number one. Number two, I will take a straight up swap. Zero fines in exchange for the Epstein files. How's that? There's a deal.
All right. I'll take it. And how about you, Heather? You got any thoughts on this verdict today?
Well, yeah. And I think that's a great idea for the swap. I do think, I mean, this was a lot of money. It's $500 million mm-hmm. that they got. And it sat there gathering interest and gathering interest. I have to say, I'm not totally surprised that they came out with that. It's just unfortunate that, it, you know, the headlines that are coming out sort of are kind of backing Trump's contention that this is some kind of a vindication. It is not. And there is probably going to be a fine, and it will be a painful fine. It's just not going to be $500 million. I would bet you anything that there's going to be, it's going to hit him again. Now he'll be, you know, this thing will drag out for years and, you know, we'll see. It's going to go to the, back to the court and then again to the appeals court and then to the New York Supreme Court and then God knows where. But, you know, at some point or another, I think he's going to have to fork over quite a bit of money. So, you know, we live in hope.
All right. Well, there's that. In what I see, frankly, as much more important news. In fact, the most important news, I think, so far this year, as I see it domestically, even though it's all about the 2026 midterm elections, which is Texas State House Democrats return to Texas this week after they left the state to break quorum in the Texas House for 2 weeks to prevent a vote on the new U.S. House maps there that will deprive voters in five minority Democratic districts of being able to select a representative of their choosing. Republicans swiftly adopted the map upon the return of the Democrats this week, though not before essentially imprisoning Democratic State Rep Nicole Collier in the House chamber for refusing to sign a form allowing Texas state troopers from surveilling her 24/7 to make sure that she did not skip town again. So I want to get beyond Texas with you guys today, as you both live in key states to subsequent battles in this gerrymandering war to the bottom. But first, let me get your thoughts on what played out in Texas. And if breaking quorum was actually worth it, after all, if the Democrats would, you know, just end up coming back and allowing the newly gerrymandered U.S. House map to be voted into law anyway, was it all worth it, Driftglass?
Yeah, I think so. This was going to end this way eventually. They could not stay away forever. They needed the right number of people to return. They did this, as you recall, back when Tom DeLay was running the show.
Yep.
A bunch of Democrats broke and ran, and eventually they came back. I think that when Texas, you have a state that's deeply corrupt and deeply in Trump's pocket as Texas, that this was eventually all going to end up this way. This was a holding action. And I think what California has done, and I hope Illinois does, is show them that nuclear deterrence is the only way we can keep these people, you know, in a box. We'd rather not. But if you're going to bring a knife, we're going to bring a gun. So that's all there is to it.
Nuclear deterrence. That is kind of the way to look at it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Digby, California State House lawmakers on Thursday, shortly before airtime, passed a measure to allow the newly redistricted U.S. House maps for our beloved Golden State, where you are also a resident, to have that map be put before the voters on November 4. Now, I have already received a mailer.
Me too.
You got one from yep. This mystery group named Protect the Voters First Act, telling me to vote no in this special election. They claim it will, quote, weaken our democratic process. It is a threat to California's landmark election reform. So as a fellow Los Angelino, is that the mailing that you also got? And with this measure looking like it will now go before voters, do you think it'll actually pass here?
Well, I'm not making predictions anymore because, you know, it doesn't work out well for me.
Really?
This is not something I'm going to do. I will just say this. I think I'm very hopeful that it will. And I think there are good reasons to believe that it could, because Donald Trump has treated California like garbage. And it has been going on and on and on with this guy. People are sick of it. We've been through a lot of trauma in this state, mm-hmm. from wildfires to the horrible firestorm we had here just a few months ago. Yep. And the way that he treated this state, the way he talks about the governor, the way that he talks about all the politicians here, including our senators, Adam Schiff and Alex Padilla, who one of his minions had, you know, taken down, you know, on the ground and handcuffed a month or so ago, that I think Californians are sick of it. This is a very powerful state. It's the fourth largest economy in the world. And we're being treated like a vassal state. Essentially, we're here to provide federal money for Trump's red states, including Texas, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's an excellent chance that Californians have just, you know, they're up to here with this. And we get ignored in elections. It's like we don't count at all, even though we're the biggest state and have the most, electoral votes. Because, mm-hmm. you know, people just count us out. They call the elections before we've even voted here half yes. the time. So, you know, I think that there's just this sense is that, all right, it's time to fight back. And I believe that there's a good chance that Californians will do this. Having said that, there's going to be a ton of money spent on this. And this guy Munger, who's the main donor for this group, I got the same mailer you did.
Yep.
they're already out there with it. They've got Schwarzenegger. I mean, please, Arnold, just stop. You know, go away.
Well, it was his. To be fair, it was his measure before the voters that ended up creating this.
And imagine the redistricting
committee.
Right. Yeah. It would imagine how powerful it would be if he were to say, "Yes, I believe in this," which is what all the politicians are saying. We believe in nonpartisan redistricting. We believe it should be done right, but we are not going to unilaterally disarm in this, and we're sick of that. That's not going to happen anymore. There was a bill. You know, we heard Kevin McCarthy this morning on TV going on and on in his usual lugubrious fashion about how, oh, it's terrible. You know, we just, it's so unfair, and it's in the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera. He could have voted for nonpartisan redistricting in the U.S. Congress numerous times, and he's always voted against it. So, you know, just shut up. We don't need to hear from these people anymore.
Well,
and I think there's a good chance that it'll pass, and I don't know whether or not it can at least offset what Texas did, which gets us back to what Driftglass just said: mutually assured destruction. You want to play that? Okay, we'll both do it, and let's just see how much you like it. See whether or not it's worth it.
I should note that here in California, for all it was just, 6 or 7 months ago when Los Angeles was on fire all over the place, thousands and thousands of homes burned to the ground. We still have not received federal disaster funding. Donald Trump has still not signed that and sent that money here to California. So, yeah, if California has any reason to want to push back against Trump, well, that is just one of many. So that's California perspective. Let me move to Driftglass. We're doing our part here in California to try to counter Trump and the Texas Republican effort to steal 5 blue seats next year and the U.S. House majority with it. Our other Democratic governors, like New York's Kathy Hochul, your governor, Illinois' J.B. Pritzker, have vowed to push back as well. Now, I know that Pritzker hosted a bunch of those fleeing Texas Democrats.
He did.
But we thank him for that. That said, what's the plan in Illinois to push back against this Republican effort? I have been waiting to hear about such a plan, but I have not yet. Is there one yet in place in Illinois?
Well, he is a hotel mogul, so he shouldn't have any trouble finding room space for fleeing Democrats.
Yeah.
That's how he made his billions.
Yeah.
I've seen many maps that were hilarious, that were basically long streamers-shaped districts that all converge on Chicago, since all the Democratic votes, for the most part, are in Chicago.
Right.
And the best calculation is that we could squeeze maybe one more Democratic seat out of the state by herding all the Republicans into, you know, one or two districts. And I think that'll probably happen. It won't be nearly the amount of significance that California or New York can bring to the party, because I live in a district where I have a Republican congressperson, Ms. Baczynski, because they redrew the district. And they siphoned off a whole bunch of Republican voters to a different place. Now, I know that everyone across the board would love to have independent voting commissions to redraw the districts fairly. That's what Democrats believe across the board. My least favorite voice of the dying establishment, a guy named David Brooks, you might have heard of him from the New York Times, was on the NewsHour, tearing what little was left of his hair out about both sides do this and it's a plague on both your houses. And, you know, yes, Republicans are fascists, and yes, it's awful, but California makes it worse, and this is like using mustard gas in World War I. And he was hysterical. And
how does California make it worse? We have an independent redistricting commission.
Yes. Well, that's the point. And because you're not allowed to push back with any vigor on PBS, because then they'll cancel you, Jonathan Capehart just sort of rolled his eyes and says, well, it's not like using mustard gas. Let's move on. But his point, the problem that you have with the establishment people is that they have a fetish for blaming both sides. They cannot break it. It's their religion. And so if one side is clearly bad, which Brooks is willing to admit, and the other side has one weapon left on the table, which California does, and he's saying, but using that weapon makes you bad. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. What other weapon would you choose? That's the question you never hear being asked of these people. What's your alternative? We'd love to have an independent commission. what's your alternative to fighting fire with fire, David?
Well,
and the answer is, I'm never going to get asked that question, so shut up.
Well, I noticed you moved back to California, and where we're actually going to, you know, hold a vote on this,
yes,
a statewide vote on this to decide if we actually want to temporarily waive the Independent Redistricting Commission. But, and I don't want to both sides of this, Drifty, but you are in Illinois. And
yes,
there is 14 Democratic seats, 3 Republican seats.
Yes.
I thought you might be in, are you in the 13th Congressional District?
Yes.
The
Mickey Pazinski, yeah.
So that's the one that stretches like almost 200 miles across the state,
yes,
from Springfield, yes, in the eastern part of the state to East St. Louis in the western part of the state.
100%.
So, you know, with that in mind, as you see it, there's already gerrymandering going on.
There is.
And can it be done? Will it be done by the legislature in the case in Illinois? And as you say, there's really just one more seat that could be squeezed out of the state.
I think that, well, Illinois Republicans are basically powerless. They're super majorities in both houses. Our governor has shown a willingness to sign such a thing. It would not surprise me. They have not given me their secret plan yet. But as with every other Democrat, I am perfectly willing to submit myself and my state to independent voting commissions to draw maps fairly, mm-hmm, proportioned fairly, mm-hmm, but I am not about to put a weapon down until the other side is willing to go along with that.
That's
never going to happen. No. And the reason Illinois has legal pot, pro-abortion, pro-immigration, all the good things you have in Illinois are only because there is a Democratic supermajority in the House and Senate, and we have a Democratic governor. And we just went through Rauner, and Rauner spent his time busting unions, screwing with the autism program in Illinois, wrecking the place, holding the budget hostage for 2 years, which is why everything fell off the table. So we know what it's like when Republicans govern. And if there were a healthy Republican Party, like, say, Jim Edgar, a former governor of Illinois, who is recently recovering from, I think, brain cancer, nice guy, goes to my church.
Not in jail?
No. We had two in jail back to back, a Republican and a Democrat. We
just
do like to play fair.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
But I know Edgar slightly, but he has a program where he gets his fellows and his interns in once a year and gives them a speech. And the last time he did that was, my Republican Party has lost its damn mind and we need to stop them at any cost. So the remnant healthy few Republicans in my state believe their party is the problem. And as long as the Republican Party is a toxic fascist party, then we are morally obliged to use every tool on the table to stop them, including redistricting.
I think that's fair enough, and I think it sort of sums up my my thoughts on that too, because, I mean, I've been an opponent of gerrymandering, Republican and Democratic, for, you know, decades at this point, and yet it seems, you know, disarming against what these guys are doing is insane. And if you want to fight for democracy, I do realize is going to hurt certain voters in California, for instance, certain Republican voters. I am not happy about that at all. But overall, when we're looking at our democracy, which has been nationalized in the U.S. House, it is insane to roll over to what we are seeing. Very quickly, though, you know, New York Governor Kathy Hochul has claimed that she will join the Texas pushback, but in New York, the state law there will not allow a new U.S. House map. I should say the state constitution will not allow them to draw U.S. House map until 2027 at the earliest. Do either of you guys know, other than California, other than whatever we're waiting to happen in Illinois, do either of you guys know of any other realistic plans in other Democratic-controlled states that are going to join this effort?
I have not.
No, I know that, I believe that somewhere Nebraska is fighting to hang on to that one electoral vote that goes left when everybody else goes right, practically, in every election.
Yeah,
that's right. My dad's birthplace. Yeah. But that's all I'm aware of. I'm not aware of any sort of big caches of Democratic votes out there that haven't been tapped into, which is a shame.
And
what about Pennsylvania? I mean, that's a swing state. And it's run by Democrats.
Is it run by Democrats? It didn't. Didn't one of the House? I think one of the houses has flipped back to Republican in Pennsylvania.
Well,
I'm not sure. it's really closely divided. It seems like it would be difficult to pull off there.
I'm sure.
But
I'm sure.
But, states like Minnesota, I think they were looking at it. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear. Now, I spoke with Dave Daley, gerrymandering expert, some weeks ago about this, and he was really ticked off because he doesn't like any of this, of course. And Heather, I know you know Dave from Salon. I used to work with him there as well. But he says, you know, there's just not that he feels Republicans are going to win this one because there's just not that many seats that can be squeezed out of Democratic states with so many independent redistricting commissions in place constitutionally in those states that are controlled by Democrats. And yet we're seeing Republican states, Florida, Ohio, South Carolina, all looking at doing what Texas is
Indiana,
doing.
Indiana, yeah, they're getting in it. Well, let me ask you a question, though. This is something that has just, and I've not heard anybody write it and write about it. And I don't know if you, I mean, you would know better than anybody. In 2010, the Democrats lost 62 House seats and 9 Senate seats. That was 2010. It wasn't that long ago that that happened.
Right.
Why are we now in a situation where we just assume that it's impossible?
Red map. Red map.
Well,
that
doesn't
was,
that tell you everything? We're dealing. This is a longstanding problem that we've obviously has been unfolding for a very long time. And here we are.
And it's a plot, a longstanding plot by Republicans to take over and spend all the money that they needed to in state legislatures in the 2010 cycle, 2012 cycle, to make sure that they were in place to gerrymander these maps.
That was the red map plan. It was Karl Rove's plan. They won the state legislatures in 2010 and they redrew everything since then.
And they spent a lot of money to get those specific state legislature seats. So this points to the importance of state legislatures, which people really aren't talking about as part of the 2026 cycle as being something that is vitally important to take over where possible.
Well, because, you know, that was right after Barack Obama won in 2008.
Right.
Everybody thought, oh, okay, everything's fine now. We got rid of that George W. Bush and those scary Republicans. We got Barack Obama in there. We can, you know, take a nap over 2010 and look what happened during that nap.
And haven't caught up since.
No. One more question before we get out for a break. This one for Driftglass. A couple of months ago, I think it was, you suggested that if Trump continues with his wildly unpopular policies, some of which I hope to talk about after the break, that the Democrats could end up flipping 40 seats in the U.S. House next year. Now, there are only thought to be about a few dozen competitive seats in play following red map in 2010. So we're only looking at, you know, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 seats that could possibly be flipped. And that was before the new gerrymandering wars. So, Drifty, I'm wondering, are you still sticking with your 40 seat prediction?
Well, first of all, if you're going to start holding me to things I used to say, I'm not coming back.
Well, used to, it was, you know, June.
No. The past, as we've learned from our Republican friends, the past is dead.
I see.
When it comes out of your mouth, it doesn't matter. It doesn't count.
Right.
So I see.
I'm just playing by their rules.
No
fair
remembering things.
Exactly. No fair remembering stuff. You know the rules? God damn.
My fault.
But on the other hand, if this is all contingent on catastrophe, on very, very bad things happening to the economy, very bad things happening to employment, on the ability of people to sort of feel it in their pocketbook and see the bad things in front of them, which is why I think you should devote the next half hour to the Epstein files, because the Epstein files is the weak point, right, at this point. That is a thing that might actually cause people to not vote for Democrats. I don't believe in that. I don't think that's possible. But stay home. They're so appalled. They're so disgusted. They're so disillusioned that they just can't bear it anymore because their dear leader has deserted them on the one solemn promise he made to them.
Okay. Well,
I'm hoping if we push hard enough on that, it might not be 40, but I'm willing to still say 30.
Okay. We're down to 30 now. Write that down. He's gone from 40 to 30. Got that. We won't hold you to account for that at all until next month when it's 20. But let's take a quick break.
It's inflation.
I hear you. Deflation. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll spend the next half hour talking about Jeffrey Epstein or other things in an attempted lightning round of hot takes from Digby and Driftglass and a whole bunch of stuff as time allows. Plus Desi's Green News Report to close us out today. All of that straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
You're listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast. Welcome back. It's the broadcast. Taking a walk on the wild side, I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Vampiric White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller joined Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Vice President J.D. Vance on a field trip to Union Station in D.C. on Wednesday to do a photo op with National Guard troops who have been standing around tourist areas for the past week or so in Trump's pretend crime-fighting campaign in the nation's capital. As you can hear in this clip, the photo op was met with protests, lots of them, from district residents demonstrating against the attempted federalization of D.C.'s police force. Here is Stephen Miller all but busting out of his pasty white skin to find some way to attack the protesters.
All these demonstrators that you've seen out here in recent days, all of these elderly white hippies, they're not part of the city and never have been. And by the way, most of the citizens who live in Washington, D.C. are black. So we're going to ignore these stupid white hippies that all need to go home and take a nap because they're all over 90 years old, and we're going to get back to the business of protecting the American people and the citizens of Washington, D.C.
So, I don't know if you could hear that, but we are still joined today by our own elderly white hippies, Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Driftglass of Pro Left Podcast. And I want to get your responses to Trump's attempted D.C. takeover and whether any of this actually makes sense, even for him. But here was Boston Mayor Michelle Wu earlier this week pushing back against thuggery by the Trump administration threatening her city if they do not cooperate with federal anti-immigration thugs.
Silence in the face of oppression is not an option. The U.S. Attorney General asked for a response by today. So here it is. Stop attacking our cities to hide your administration's failures.
And, of course, last week here in Los Angeles, Trump's ICE goons were stationed outside of the Democracy Center, where Gavin Newsom, governor, was introducing his Election Rigging Response Act. Digby, as a tired old hippie yourself, between naps, do you see any of this actual weaponization of the federal government with National Guard deployments, masked, armed federal ICE goons in major cities is actually working somehow for Trump and the Republican Party?
Well, it doesn't seem to be, according to what polling we have already. People don't seem to particularly like this. It's absurd. And you see these National Guard guys, you know, wandering around in front of the Lincoln Memorial while tourists are stopping and taking pictures. It's ridiculous. But at the same time, I do hear the mainstream media, again, hate to harp on this, but they are handing it to him. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know, hey, this is really, you know, it's really working for him. Yes, you know, you have to admit there is crime in the cities. And of course, there's always been crime in cities. There's crime in small towns. There's crime everywhere. It's a thing, but there just doesn't happen to be a lot of crime or an unusual amount of crime right now. It's been going down. But that doesn't seem to matter. And they're kind of handing this to him. So I honestly don't know where that's going to end up.
Driftglass, is all of this really an attempt this attempt to game elections because Trump is suddenly surprised or does even know that his policies are actually wildly unpopular, as Digby points out, unpopular with the American people. Was he actually under the impression that people wanted, you know, huge new taxes with via tariffs and actually want armed federal troops and fat masked ICE agents in the streets of major American cities? Or does he suspect that he can just bully Americans into liking this or something else? What is the I guess what I'm trying to say, what is the strategy to any of this? Because it does not seem to be popular, even if they, you know, the corporate media is not reporting it as usual as they should.
Well, the key phrase there is the American people. And as you know, I don't think there is any such thing as the American people. I think there are distinct groups in this country that have diametrically opposed or tangentially related opinions about things.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is performing acts of fascist theater for their benefit. He is parading his National Guard through the Capitol so that pictures of them guarding the monuments of America can be sent out to the heartland where I live and impress the bigots and imbeciles who vote for him. That's why they're doing it. And it's also not quite normalizing, but getting people used to the sight of federal troops on the streets, just in case the day comes when he has to flip a switch and have them start shooting people. And that's my fear, is that he is gradually introducing the country at large to the idea that this is normal. Because they're clearly not patrolling places where there are crimes. There are plenty of crime all over the place, but that's not where they're going. They're going places where tourists are and where they can be photographed defending the nation's honor. The restaurant people are not happy about this. Their dining rate is down year over year. Their dining rate is way down over the last couple of weeks. They're hacked off about it because people do not want to come out for a nice dinner as stormtroopers go past their cafe. So he's affecting local businesses. He's lying about every bit of it. But for the legacy media, that doesn't matter. And for the right-wing media, that is pure sugar-high propaganda. And that's, I think, why he's doing it.
And if he does, if this is for a time when he starts shooting people, and we should, you know, note that during the George Floyd demonstrations in 2020, he had asked his defense secretary to have troops shoot protesters in the legs. Thankfully, we had a guy who said, no, Mr. President, we can't do that. I don't know that our current defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, would say, no, Mr. President, we can't do that. But again, that said, even if you start shooting people, shooting Americans in the streets, how does that benefit Donald Trump and the Republican Party?
In whose eyes?
I'm not among those people who thinks there will not be elections next year or in 2 years thereafter. I don't think voters will like that, whether there's a thing known as the American people or not. There are things known as voters, and they will have a say on all of this. And none of this, nothing that Trump has done over the past 7 months has made him more popular. It has all made him less popular. So I know he's an autocrat, a wannabe dictator, but it does not seem to be working for him.
Can I just interject one thing?
Please do.
It doesn't matter as long as a substantial percentage of lazy, ignorant people towards the middle are convinced Democrats are worse. That's where the both sides do it lie does its most damage. The people that aren't hardcore MAGA but have been told for 40 years that Democrats and Republicans, the same thing. Gavin Newsom and Trump are the same thing. They're identical. There's a large section of the public that just believes this automatically. So, yes, he's a fascist and a strong man, but he's a good businessman. And you know what? Democrats, they're kind of worse. They're a little worse. They want dictatorship. So as much as it pains me to vote for the right-wing fascists, I believe I have to because Democrats are a little bit worse. And that's all he needs.
Yeah, well, you heard the guy that we played at the top of the show who regrets his vote.
Andrew Cuomo. That was Andrew Cuomo, right?
No, that was not Andrew Cuomo.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
That was a MAGA guy who regrets his vote, and now he's going to go with the Democratic Party. And, you know, it doesn't take much. There's this idea that Donald Trump, you know, it's an idea, by the way, that Donald Trump loves to put out there, that it was, you know, he wiped out Kamala Harris in 2024.
And, right.
But it was very few voters in very few states that gave the election to Trump. If there are more folks out there, like the guy I played at the top of the show, saying that he regrets being on the wrong side of history by voting for Donald Trump, et cetera, it doesn't take very many to change, to get us to, actually, let me get behind you, to get us to your 30 or 40 seats flipped next year in the U.S. House.
Yep.
So, I'm not sure who he's appealing to. Yes, it doesn't take many for Republicans to win, but it also doesn't take many for Republicans to lose. And there's a lot of stuff that they're doing that seems like they're begging voters to vote against them right now.
If I have a question for Digby, which is, do you believe there's a certain momentum to fascism that it has to constantly accelerate and get more performative and more brash and more strutting, because that's just the nature of the monster?
Well, I hadn't thought about that, but I think you're probably right. And the whole performative aspect of it, it's always been that way. You look at Germany and Italy in the 30s, look at Franco's Spain, you know, it's a pageantry, right? I mean, they do that.
Right, right.
Donald Trump is going to downtown DC with the troops to review the situation himself. Yes. And he's a moment away from putting on a uniform. I swear to God, he is that close to doing it. So yeah, I think you're right. There is that. And of course our modern media, you know, system really does give him a lot of ability to kind of raise the performance aspect of all this. And that's part of what we're seeing. I kind of agree, though, that, I'm just going to just briefly just look at some poll numbers that I looked at today. The Economist YouGov had a very thorough poll, really interesting one to look at, where he is, you know, the Democrats are staying the same. Trump has, he's got fewer strongly approved numbers among his voters than the Democrats have strongly disapproved. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about, low propensity voters and midterm elections and all that, that's probably meaningful. And even more meaningful is this idea of these independents, which he is cratering with people who identify as independents. They're the ones that don't seem to like this. Now, will they vote? No idea. I don't, if they're independents, maybe they don't vote. Maybe they're, good voters. I don't know about that. But that group is really, really unhappy with what they're seeing. And I suspect it's more about economics than about democracy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be my guess.
Yep.
So I don't know where that's going to wind up. I really don't. But this the performative aspect of what we're seeing is just, it's almost getting to the point where it's absurd, which is where I think, and I think a lot of people are starting to see it that way. I mean, this is getting, the gold in the Oval Office, for instance. That is ridiculous. It is so over the top that anybody who's looking at it is going, what is going on there? And why is the president spending so much time redecorating and putting his picture up all over everywhere? There's a lot of weirdness that's really creeping into, quote, Tim Walz. So I think that may have an effect as well. And this is where I think Newsom, which who we haven't talked about, but just briefly, I love what he's doing. Think it's great. I think it is. It's good.
You're talking
for
about his trolling of Donald Trump. Yeah. On.
I love
Amen.
It. And
Amen.
I think the base deserves this. We voters deserve to have somebody doing this. And I think it is highlighting the absolute weirdness of what is going on as well. I mean, obviously, there's a very serious threat, but there's also just bizarre behavior going on here.
Well, and I was going to spend the rest of the half hour talking about Epstein, but Drift Glass blew it with bringing up fascism, and then but I will ask you, I've got about 10 seconds for each of you, because I do got to get out before the Green News report, but as long as you raise the point, your favorite Gavin Newsom meme on Twitter that you have seen so far?
I'll say it. I like the one with Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
and Tucker Carlson. Who's the other one?
Kid Rock.
Yeah. All praying before Gavin Newsom. That one made me laugh out loud.
You got a favorite, Drifty?
I really like that one. I like him riding bareback on a horse with machine guns as well. And there's a truck with Gavin Newsom stickers and flags all over it. Yeah, I'm just loving it. It's all good. It's multimedia.
My favorite is the him riding bareback on a great white shark in a suit.
With an American flag.
With an American flag behind him. And I'm not sure where that American flag is being hosted. But anyway, I got to get out. Thanks, guys. Heather Digby Parton, find her over at salon.com and on her own blog, digbysblog.net, and on the blue skies at digby56. Find Driftglass over at driftglass.blogspot.com. That's his blog. And download the Pro Left podcast. Podcast at proleftpod.com and on the blue skies at Driftglass. Thanks, guys. We'll see you in a few weeks, I suspect.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being had.
All right, a quick break, and we are back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
All right, last one for summer.
Yep.
Let's get to it, our latest Green News Report.
So this is climate change, Michael.
In short, it is.
Spain battles its worst wildfire season on record. Yes, intensified by man-made climate change. The world is drying out, threatening humanity's supply of fresh water. Plus,
all the climate science and all of the other priorities that the last administration had at NASA, we're going to move aside.
Acting administrator wants NASA to give up climate science.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And all of the science that we do is going to be directed towards exploration, which is the mission of NASA, to explore, not to do all of these earth sciences.
Well, that's strange. Transportation Secretary NASA Administrator and former MTV Road Rules star Sean Duffy, the NASA mission statement actually reads, and I quote, "To explore, use, and enable the development of space for human enterprise and to advance scientific knowledge and understanding of the Earth," and also, quote, "We study the Earth as a planet and as a system to understand global change, enabling the world to address environmental issues." Other than that, you're totally on the money, Road Rules boy. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, let me take a guess. More climate-related disasters across the globe.
Yes, unfortunately. Spain is calling in the military to battle its most destructive wildfire season on record. Wildfires there have burned more than 1,400 square miles so far this year.
Square miles?
Yes, exacerbated by a prolonged, deadly 16-day heat wave with searing temperatures topping 113 degrees Fahrenheit that officials estimate has caused more than 1,000 deaths. Mm. Yes, man-made climate change driven by the burning of fossil fuels is intensifying wildfires across the entire Northern Hemisphere, according to Dr. Michael Mann on the BBC.
Summer after summer, we're seeing hotter conditions. We're seeing more extensive drought, summer drought, over large parts of North America and Europe. And it's not rocket science. You make it hot, you make it dry, you get these sorts of wildfires.
Oh, don't tell Sean Duffy it's not rocket science.
And the world itself is drying out, losing fresh water at unprecedented and accelerating rates. Using NASA satellite data, scientists at Arizona State University found that since 2002, the Northern Hemisphere has lost unprecedented amounts of fresh water, driven by climate change through extreme heat and drought, plus unmitigated extraction of groundwater. So much groundwater is now being pumped out that its runoff is one of the biggest contributors to global sea level rise. 75% of the world's population will face a decline in water supply, with enormous consequences for water security, food production, and increased risk of conflict and instability. The researchers called for urgent action to address both climate change and unsustainable water use. Here in the U.S., one of the countries that is drying out, reality TV show star turned transportation secretary and acting NASA administrator Sean Duffy announced late last week he wants the agency to step back from climate science to focus on space exploration.
Mm-hmm.
NASA's Earth Science Program is the world's largest provider of climate and weather data. Abandoning it would violate the 1958 law that created NASA, which specifically mandates the study of Earth science. It's part of the Trump administration's efforts to dismantle federal scientific research.
Well, who knew it was part of NASA's mission to study Earth? Oh, I guess the acting administrator Sean Duffy didn't.
But some better news. Despite the repeal of federal EV manufacturing tax incentives by the Trump administration and Republicans, Ford Motor Company announced it is doubling down on electric vehicle manufacturing in the U.S. to compete with China.
Good.
Ford CEO Jim Farley says the company has innovated a revolutionary modular EV design, enabling a triple assembly line process and cheaper battery materials that significantly reduces manufacturing time and costs.
Cool.
Ford says it will create thousands of new jobs across the country for the new system and two new battery plants.
Also cool.
Good news. The Trump administration has reluctantly agreed to restore funding to states that it had frozen for building out a national network of high-speed EV chargers under the Biden-era Inflation Reduction Act.
Also good. Is he okay?
Finally, out here in Southern California, one of the nation's largest solar plus battery storage power plants is now online in Mojave. The plant will provide 7% of total electricity requirements for the city of Los Angeles, including after sunset, clean, emissions-free, and much of it at a record low price.
But Fox News said that is not possible.
And they're wrong.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We are off next week until after the Labor Day holiday. Please have a safe one. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
See you in September.
Yes, we will. I hope.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks again to our guest today, Heather Digby Parton of Salon Driftglass of the Pro Left Podcast. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always an honor and appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. And hey, while you're there, please feel free to hit one of those donate buttons to help us stay on your public airwaves as we head into the fall. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. We could do none of this without you. That's it. Drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. We will be away next week. You can find me perhaps on the social medias at The Brad Blog. You can find Desi Doyen there.
At Green News Report.
There you go. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time after Labor Day, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Bye-bye. So long.